3, 2, 1, hit it.
Chris Rongi, Amy Marks Kors, The Chris and Amy Show.
You know who it
also,
is.
Also, if you didn't know, this is called The Show.
Yeah. On 104.1 FM, KMOX.
Good morning, friends. How are you? You good? Amy, you good?
Oh, I'm great.
Everybody's
I'm a little
good.
Sticky.
Why are you sticky? What's going on with you?
Well,
because of the mugginess? Because
it's a little muggy, and what happened is
I
take a shower, get cleaned up before work.
This is what I'm talking
about.
You
got to moisturize. You put on lotion. I walked outside, and suddenly it was a paste. I just felt like, face was sticky. I felt like I had a gluey paste all over me.
You know, this is what I talk about with humidity. When people say, oh, the heat and humidity is great. Oh, the stickiness, I love it. Yeah. Yeah, that's great until you have to wear clothes.
Here's the thing, though.
It's great unless you're at the pool all day.
But I can handle the humidity more than I can handle the super duper dry heat that I just...
The Phoenix heat?
Yes,
I would
the
take
Sierra
that
Nevada's heat.
Like, oh, no.
Ronj, there were...
No.
What are they called? Tumbleweeds.
Yeah.
There were tumbleweeds.
I would take that 100 times out of 100.
I felt like my skin was shriveling up, cracking, and like falling off my body. I felt dehydrated. I felt like I was in a convection oven. I will take the humid heat because at least your skin doesn't feel like it's going to crack and fall off. It was so dry. It was so, everything was arid. It felt like apocalyptic.
I love it.
Ugh, I love it.
I love it. It's just, it's so much more manageable. I think I would take that 120 degrees or whatever it is, if it's dry, than the summers that we get.
It's a different kind of intensity. I can tell you what, as bad as it is running in the humidity here, one time I went for a run in Scottsdale, Arizona, when the actual temperature was 112, and I realized I am going to die because you breathe in the air and it's so hot. I think I was cooking myself.
Okay, but Amy, would you run if it's 112 here, which it has gotten there in the last few years?
Absolutely.
And because you know it's humid.
Yes.
So you're telling me that's better.
Yeah, because I would have a nice dewy glow.
Oh, yeah. And your lungs are full of soup. So that's better for you.
Yes.
Amy Marks, Kors, Chris Rongi, we love you all. 314-436-7900. Stay indoors.
Stay hydrated.
Hydrate.
That's what they say.
Leave a voice message on the Audacy app, AUDACY, and also watch us on Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter. Our account is @ChrisAmyKMOX.
Time now for the top of the order. The top three stories everyone will be talking about.
Devastation in Texas from the flooding over the weekend. A Missouri Task Force 1 is being deployed to Texas to help in the response. We are going to talk to the Assistant Fire Chief of Boone County, Gail Blomenkamp, today on the show. Join us at 11 o'clock.
And what in the world is going on with the Kansas City Chiefs and Kansas City Royal stadiums? So they're going to accept now. They want them to accept new stadium incentives. They want to push this thing over the state line.
No, it's all very confusing.
Why are they extending the deadline for this?
Because Kansas is still in the game, apparently.
No,
and in my mind, I thought it was over.
I thought it was over when Governor Kehoe
got
the Missouri legislature to agree to the tax breaks.
Cardinals and Nationals tonight. They will start a series at Busch Stadium. Also, they've promoted J.J. Weatherholt. That's their top prospect. He is going to AAA. Don't freak out yet. He is not on the big club. I'm guessing that at some point you'll see him. But he has been promoted to AAA, which is good news for him. He gets a step closer to the big leagues. And I have no idea what's going on with the stadium funding, Amy. I thought, I was with you about a month ago when Governor Kehoe made that announcement that they had the tax incentives ready to go for both the Chiefs and the Royals. Potential new stadiums in Missouri. I don't know. I'm naive. I just thought that was the end of it. They're going to stay in Missouri, but apparently Kansas has asked for an extension on their deadline, which means they have the date is somewhere in December, but it could come sooner than that they're trying to work something out too, apparently.
Yeah.
So as of right now, it is still up in the air, but I was like, oh, done deal. Okay. you know, maybe I guess the both of those stadiums are going to stay in the state of Missouri. And I know they're good economic drivers. There are studies that suggest that public funding for stadiums isn't always the best idea mm-hmm. for municipalities. But I think it would be a shame to lose those two teams across the border, at least in terms of revenue for the state. If you live in Kansas City and all you care about are the teams, or if you live in the region, it doesn't really matter what side of the state, what side of the border they're on, because you could still go and enjoy your team, right? So it's not like that big of a deal. But in terms of revenue for the state of Missouri, I think it would make a difference here.
You know, it's interesting because we know that what the Missouri legislature offered, again, Governor Kehoe able to rally the troops, get the state legislature to agree on this. What was it, 50%? That was the tax deal.
Yeah.
And we know that the offer from Kansas was better. I think it was like 70%, something like that.
Yep.
There was a discrepancy. So here's the thing. If Kansas has already made a better deal and Missouri has already said, we'll give you 50, what are they trying to do? Get Missouri to go back and somehow increase the tax breaks that they've already agreed on? Or are they trying to get a ridiculous deal from Kansas and move? Some of this, it feels a bit fake to me. I you know, it feels like some kind of performative back and forth. I'm sure it's not. I'm sure this is just my naive brain thinking, well, surely they'll stay in Missouri. And certainly it was over when Governor Kehoe got the legislature to agree on the tax break. I don't know why this doesn't feel real to me. And what I hope doesn't happen is, in my naivete, I am surprised that suddenly they moved to Kansas and I will be shocked.
Well, my guess is they'll get it done and they will stay in Missouri. That's my guess.
What bothers me is the whole, like I said, the attitude from the owners of, well, if you don't appreciate us enough to give us a tax break, we will move our team to a group of fans that get it, that like us more, that appreciate us. That is bull. Don't do that. At least be honest and say, we're trying to make as much money as possible.
When I was in Chicago over the weekend, had that exact conversation, and we were talking about Jerry Reinsdorf, who he owns the White Sox and the Bulls, and he did that thing in 1988 or 89. I can't recall exactly. I think it was 89. And he threatened to move the team to Tampa. And then the governor of Illinois at the time stepped in and said, well, hold on. Here, last minute deal with like minutes to spare. They gave them this incredible stadium deal where they built the stadium. The team leases it from the state for like nothing. And then they still act like they're poor as an organization. It's astounding. They didn't pay for their own stadium, and they act like they don't have any money to spend. And I think that's why people across the country, and it doesn't matter if you're in Missouri or Illinois or California, it doesn't matter. People have less of an appetite to let public money go toward building a stadium for people who have billions and could privately fund it. And then I told the story of what happened here with our soccer team. Mm-hmm. Granted, that stadium does not cost what an NFL stadium would cost. It's much, much smaller. But remember how we had that ballot measure for it was like a hospitality tax, mm-hmm. and the people voted it down, and it was presented to everybody like, hey, if we don't pass this, we're not going to get a team because we have to commit to building a stadium before MLS is willing to give us a soccer team. And so that's the way it was framed. And I bought into that, too. I thought, oh, gosh, you know, we need to have stuff downtown. We need to have this team. We need to have another thing in St. Louis. If we don't vote for this, we're going to be screwed and we're not going to get a team. Voted down. What happened? Private entities swooped in and said, you know what? We'll do it. We will build a stadium. And that's exactly what happened in St. Louis. So it can be done. And when you see stuff like that and you see the Chicago Fire mm-hmm. MLS team has done the exact same thing. They made that announcement within the last month on the property, by the way, where the Sox were trying to build a new stadium. So you have another private owner who has privately funded a stadium or is going to, just like what happened to MLS. So people see that and they go, well, if it can be done, then you should do that. And stop asking us for money. Stop coming to us with your hands out.
So, speaking of stadiums, and before we move on, as you remember yesterday when I was talking about the 5K world record and 1500 world record that were set at Hayward Field in Oregon, there was a $270, $300 million renovation to that track stadium. It's a stadium just for track. Mm-hmm. We got a message. Hey, Amy, my wife and I were listening to your show today from Eugene, Oregon. There were some comments that Cardinals fans would not be track fans made by Ronji. First of all, we are huge Cardinals fans. We live at One Cardinal Way. Kind of cool.
Nice.
We are also huge track fans. And
things are going well for them.
Had an absolutely amazing time at the Prefontaine Classic. Then he goes on to explain that they were able to get selfies, and then he names a bunch of track athletes like Grant Fisher. Remember Tara Davis Woodhall from the Olympics? She had the cowboy hat. She's an Olympian. Her husband is a Paralympian. I think he doesn't have legs, and so he's like a Paralympian, and they were like the dream couple at the Olympics.
He's not that Pistorius guy, is he?
He is not that guy. His wife even got an autograph from Beatrice Chibet right after the world record. Anyway, they said it was an awesome week in Oregon. They're heading back home to St. Louis tomorrow, which would be today. So thank you very much for the message.
Well, I didn't say Cardinals fans don't ever like track. What I said was I doubt Cardinals fans looked at that weekend and said, wow, what a great sports weekend.
It was
after
a great
dropping
sports
weekend. 2 of 3 at Wrigley Field against their division rival mm-hmm. in games they probably needed to win. Not must wins. They're not must wins, but they kind of wanted to win those.
On your must win scale, 1 to 10? 1 to 10?
5.
Okay.
Those
okay.
were five.
Five. That's fair.
Yeah. So, you know, it's a little bit different.
But we do appreciate Kelly listening and assuming on the Odyssey app.
Would have to be.
Have to be. So thank
the
you,
FM
Kelly.
Signal does not go that far. Amy Markscores and Chris Ronji on the show today. Also, we have another thing to tell you about.
A little breaking news.
I mean, we kind of knew.
Well,
right?
Yeah, but we're cool. We're on the inside.
We're on the inside.
It's
cool.
Inside baseball.
Yeah.
And the inside baseball is also outside baseball. And that means that the St. Louis Cardinals
yes.
and KMOX Radio
yes.
are continuing their broadcast partnership.
Our partnership.
Oh, yeah, we're on KMOX.
We're saying therefore, like we're not KMOX.
Well, because now the news at One the Fun.
Oh, well, no, the news was at 9 or at 8 or
yeah,
7.
But that's what
something.
They say. No, the news at One the Fun. I forget that we're on KMOX. I'm sorry.
Yeah, we are part of the station.
Let me start that over. KMOX and the St. Louis Cardinals are continuing our broadcast partnership.
That's right. There is an extension beyond. It was 2025. This mm-hmm. was technically the last season of the contract where we air Cardinals baseball and are a great partner.
Yep.
And they are a great partner with us and have been for many, many, many years. There was a short break in there.
Yeah.
But the Cardinals next season will stay with KMOX.
It's very exciting. That, I mean, obviously. Obviously.
We're the best. Yeah, we obviously are the best.
Obviously. We have an AM, we have an FM, we have the Odyssey app.
How could you want Cardinals baseball to be anywhere else but KMOX?
We have Moxie. Our literal, like, mascot is a baseball.
I don't think people know about Moxie enough. We need to be promoting the hell out of Moxie.
314-436-7900 if you know who Moxie is.
We have a great... I love it. It's an older, it's been around for decades, baseball logo, and it's a little baseball with a KMOX hat. I think it's adorable. I have a t-shirt.
I put my own money into making a
Me
sweatshirt
too.
With Moxie on it.
Me too. I made a t-shirt.
Yeah.
I love Moxie.
I think Moxie might be what pushed the Cardinals over the edge.
I think it is,
for
too.
For an extension.
I think they were thinking about all kinds of other stuff, and they said, wow, that mascot, though, too good.
It never would occur to me ever in a bazillion years to not have the Cardinals on KMOX.
It was weird for a minute when they weren't.
I don't talk about that time.
Yeah, it just doesn't, it didn't make any sense.
No, it doesn't make any sense.
But they are back home, been back home, and it's great to have them and continue. So again, we will be the Cardinals flagship station yeah. for the foreseeable future.
So also, This is breaking news. The Chris and Amy show, first ones to talk about this on KMOX, leads me to believe maybe they don't know that we were talking about this already.
What do you mean?
Maybe they're breaking the news. Maybe KMOX is breaking the news after our show.
Oh.
And they don't know. They're in a meeting right now.
Because the fun hasn't started yet?
The fun hasn't started yet, and the news is over. So in the black hole of broadcasting that is the midday show, they don't know that we're talking about this, which means you listeners, see, you get perks for listening to our show.
That's right.
You get to hear stuff that you maybe are not supposed to hear.
You get breaking news, and you get it all the time. And you only get it here.
That's right.
Is there another place in St. Louis to get really good breaking news?
Nope.
No, this is it. I mean, there are other good outlets here, other good journalists in town, but man, we're on top of it.
You know, I will say this because I've listened to KMOX for so long, and I really truly believe that I have this job because of a clerical error, and they just don't have the energy to fix it.
Correct.
And so I was a fan of KMOX. I talked about the first time I really fangirled out. I was on sports on a Sunday morning with Tom Ackerman, and I walked into Studio B, and he had a cup of coffee and a newspaper reading the sports section, hosting sports on a Sunday morning. I about passed out. But also, Michael Calhoun he must have been hired when he was 7 because he's not that old, but he's been here forever. He has such an authoritative voice, and psychologically, he is such a voice of authority and news and help and so forth in my own mind that he plays jokes on me because I believe everything he says. I am the most gullible person.
That's correct.
When I talk to Michael Calhoun.
That is correct.
Because everything he says sounds official and I trust him.
Michael, yeah.
Yeah.
So I don't love it when storms happen, but the one consolation I have is that I know I can turn this station on and Michael's going to be talking about the storm wherever it is.
And for people who don't...
Because I love storm mode.
Yeah, for people who don't realize how it works, what I love about radio is it's like... It's so live. It's kind of chaotic and last minute.
Isn't it awesome?
It's the opposite of like people are shocked when they see it. Like, oh, this is how you guys do this. That's how I feel.
If you have ever gone back and seen the actual, it's CBS News when the Kennedy assassination happens around 12:30 Central Time.
Yeah,
and they break in with it. They have a couple of bulletins, and then they go live. Where they have somebody at the desk, and then that person gets up, and then Cronkite, like, takes his place at the desk. And it was the first time that a news station had gone live 24 hours coverage wall to wall, and they did it for like 4 days. And you can go back and find it. And I did this one time where I watched hours of it. It was amazing, and. It was chaotic, like they didn't know how to transition from one thing to the next because they had never done it before.
It's really interesting.
But the chaos of it, I thought, just made it more imminent in a way. Sometimes in radio, it feels that way, but it's like controlled chaos.
Yeah, I mean, people are coming through the door. The newsroom is saying, this is happening. But like while we're on air, sometimes I'm talking and the news director is talking to Ronch. He'll turn off his mic. I mean, it's just so in the moment. But I bring up Michael Calhoun because in storm mode, he'll be here till 2 or 3 in the morning and that's his call. Mm-hmm. He'll sit here and say, no, I'm going to sit here. I'm going to broadcast until all the storms have moved out. And it's really cool. It makes you feel like you're part of something special. And again, if you're like, Amy, why are you tooting your own horn? It's because it's not me. I'm the fan. I'm the station, radio fan that listens and goes, oh my gosh, this is how it works.
In December, the station will be 100 years old.
So cool.
You know, and it has been doing it for a century.
It's been
way before we were even around. So it's all the credit goes to this station and the history of it. And our history with the Cardinals continues, an extension beyond this season. So in 2026, and as I said, for the foreseeable future, the Cardinals and KMOX continue to be partners, and we are glad about that. So we wanted to check in from Texas and find out what the latest is there. We do have Tracy Wolf, CBS climate reporter, who is going to join us because floods are getting more and more dangerous, and we also live in an area that gets flooded quite a bit. So we'll talk to Tracy when we come back here on 104.1 FM KMOX.
Well, search and rescue efforts continue in Texas following the devastating floods there. Do want to mention that Missouri Task Force 1, consisting of 50 members from Boone County in Missouri, is heading down there. We'll talk with the fire chief, the assistant fire chief, later. But joining us now is CBS climate reporter Tracy Wolf. And Tracy, we appreciate your time this morning as the country has its eyes and thoughts focused on those impacted by the floods in Texas.
Definitely. It's nice to be here with you.
I think one of the first questions that I think we all had, seeing the river rise as much as it did in such a short time, I guess it's a big question, but how did that happen?
Well, listen, I think one of the things that has surprised me in all of this is everyone seems shocked by the amount of water that happened in the flooding. And what we're seeing with these extreme rain events, whether it's in Texas, whether it's Hurricane Helene in North Carolina, whether it was Hurricane Harvey in Houston a few years ago, climate change makes our atmosphere warmer. The warmer the atmosphere is, the more water it can hold. In fact, for every 1 degree Fahrenheit of warming, the atmosphere holds 4% more water vapor. That translates into heavier downpours that can cause flooding. So with all these events, when these massive weather systems move over warm masses of water, so in this case in Texas, that weather system moved over the Gulf, which is incredibly warm. It sucked up a ton of moisture and energy, and then it dropped it over there in central Texas, dropping an insane amount of rain, up to 20 inches in some parts of the country, that hadn't seen rain in so long. In fact, one thing that we discovered yesterday was prior to this weather event, central Texas was experiencing extreme and exceptional drought conditions. So I'm sure you have been in places where it is very dry and then all of a sudden you pour a ton of water on it. The earth is not capable of absorbing that water very quickly. So the combination of those drought conditions on top of a ton of rain created that exceptional flooding. And a lot of that rain is happening because the atmosphere is holding more moisture. And so this is not just happening in Texas, it's happening all over.
That we know is one of the most flooded areas in the country. I mean, we have our fair share of that mm-hmm. here in Missouri and Illinois, but it's nothing like mm-hmm. like that. So is what happened here more unusual than what they typically get when they have a big event like this?
No, unfortunately, I would say, again, you're seeing these heavier precipitation events all across the country. In fact, hourly rainfall rates have increased by 15% on average across 126 U.S. cities. This has been analyzed by scientists. So we're seeing these heavier rainfall events everywhere. Just as an example, near Kerrville, Texas, which is kind of that epicenter of where the majority of the casualties happened, Austin is not that far away. It has seen a 19% increase in higher rainfall intensity since the 1970s. San Antonio, also not that far away, has seen a 6% increase in rainfall intensity. So again, this is happening all across the country. I know you guys are very accustomed to seeing this happen, especially living along the Mississippi, the levels go up and down. But, we are seeing this more and more. And as greenhouse gas emissions increase, there has been a recent scientific study that said that flash flooding, especially in the Southwest, is likely to increase.
And I know that this area of Texas has the nickname Flash Flood Alley because, as you said, this is an area that experiences flash floods frequently over the course of time. They've seen this. And of course, this was an extraordinary amount of rain that caused this flash flooding. And I had read that the river at its height when it was flooding was moving with the same amount of water as Niagara Falls.
Wow. Well, I'll admit, I haven't seen that, but you're right. Where this location is geographically placed, rivers are converging. It's called hill country. So, if you're going to get a lot of rain, the water is going to run down the hills. It's going to pool in those valleys. And again, I admit that I am a victim of this. Sometimes when I get those alerts or see those things like, hey, you've got a flood watch, you've got a flood warning, I don't necessarily translate that into, oh, I need to do X, Y, and Z to get myself out of harm's way. This place has flooded before. They have seen casualties in this area. It was quite a long time ago. We call these 100-year floods, but as our temperature, as our atmosphere is warming, these things are becoming more frequent. And so I think that this is unfortunately a very devastating wake-up call that we can't ignore those warnings anymore, right? When those things come through, we need to pay attention to them. Of course, the real tragedy here is that the peak of that flooding was really happening between 5 and 7 o'clock in the morning when most people were asleep. You know, I get those warnings on my phone, but they pop up as text messages or push alerts. I don't think I would have necessarily heard that in the middle of the night. So something that a lot of experts are talking about is there's these very, very inexpensive what they're called NOAA weather radios. So NOAA is the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. They create these radios where they run off a battery. It's super old-fashioned, very basic, very vintage. But they will blast out alerts, you know, at any time, hour of the day. In fact, it's available on Amazon Prime. Prime days are happening now for $50. This is something, if you're camping in an area like this, it would be very, very beneficial to have, because if the power goes out, that radio will still operate and can deliver the alert that you need.
And I know cell service is spotty in some of these areas, which at the camp, there were stories of, you know, they weren't allowed to, the counselors weren't allowed to have their phones with them, so they didn't get the alerts anyway. But there's also a concern because there could have been these warning sirens installed from the reporting that we're getting, and they weren't done for various reasons. Some of them seem silly, but what is the, like, how much would that have helped if there was a warning system like a siren system?
Yes, I think, you know, the benefit of hindsight is going to be a painful one in this situation, because I do believe any amount of advanced warning probably would have saved somebody's life. So I know that the Texas state legislature, I believe the federal government, are going to look very long and hard at those warning systems. Should there have been sirens placed along the river? Could they have blasted them out and woken people up? I think the answer is yes. How many people would it have saved? We don't know. But I think in this instance, saving one more life would have been a benefit.
Tracy Wolf, CBS climate reporter, thank you so much for joining us this morning. We really appreciate it.
Same. Have a good day.
Thank you. Yeah, Ranj, it is, it's kind of overwhelming, but the Niagara Falls statistic, so it's an estimated 100 billion gallons of rain fell in just a few hours, which is more than the daily flow of Niagara Falls. So it would be like dumping Niagara Falls into the Guadalupe River over the course of an hour or two. And the way that that flood pushed through, kind of just totally overwhelming. You're seeing the stories come out from people who were in that area. There was the Wall Street Journal did a story on a dad who was camping in a cabin close by. This was not Camp Mystic, but in that area. There was another cabin with the grandparents and his two daughters. I believe they were 9 and 11, around that age. And he said he woke up in their cabin, maybe thunder, stepped off of the bed, and there was already 4 inches of water in the cabin. He didn't realize the cabin was flooded. So he woke his wife up and said, we've got to go get, you know, the grandparents and our daughters. He walked outside. The water was so high and flowing so quickly, he grabbed his kayak, tried to kayak upstream to where the girls were in the grandparents' cabin. Couldn't reach them because it was white water. So it was white. It was like white water rafting upstream. He couldn't get there. Their phones finally went through because they said it's an area with really poor cell service.
Yep.
And they got texts from the two girls. It says, I love you. Each one texted,
I
love you. And they found their bodies several hours later. And the girls had their arms and hands hooked. They were holding on to each other when they passed away.
You know, we talked about the warning sirens failing here in St. Louis, and we don't know how many lives that could have saved. And we lost 5 people during the tornadoes that happened here in May. But even if it saved one person, I think it would have been worth that. And this is, there's this passage here from a CNN story about the warning system that was never implemented that some people in Kerr County wanted. So, and let me just read this for you, because it's astounding, honestly. At a 2016 meeting, County Commissioner Tom Moser declared Kerr was probably the highest risk area in the state for flooding and described the county's early warning system as pretty antiquated. Moser, who retired from the commission in 2021, told CNN his efforts to improve the system hit wall after wall over the years after massive flooding elsewhere in the Hill County region. In 2015, Moser said he studied how nearby Comal County had installed sirens, adopting plans for shutting off low water crossings and made for other flood preparations. He suggested Kerr County follow suit, but some locals questioned where the funding would come from, while others worried about noise. Quote, some people didn't like the concept of sirens going off and disturbing everybody. One of his fellow commissioners, H.A. Buster Baldwin, voiced those concerns at a 2016 meeting. Quote, the thought of our beautiful Kerr County having these damn sirens going off in the middle of the night, I'm going to have to start drinking again to put up with y'all. You kidding me, dude?
Well, and it's amazing.
And by the way, he died in 2022, this guy.
Yeah, but even last year, I didn't know this, but storms and flooding killed 13 people in San Antonio in the same nearby in the same hill country. And so that's a lot of people. Like 13 people died in flooding in a flood event last year. And then we know that this is Flash Flood Alley. But again, right now, just hearing stories of heroism, of devastation. I saw Scott Ruskin. He's a Coast Guard swimmer. I saw him being interviewed yesterday. He had never been on a rescue mission before. I think he had 6 months. He had just graduated from Coast Guard training 6 months ago. He single-handedly helped evacuate 165 stranded people from Camp Mystic. And he was the only swimmer. I mean, he was the only rescue swimmer in the water at that time in that area. There were two young women from Mexico who were counselors at the camp, and Mexican President Claudia Sheinbaum praised them because those two young women not only helped save girls, but had the foresight to write those girls' names in permanent marker on their arms, you know, in case of worst case scenario. There was another man, I believe it's maybe Julian Ryan. He was 27 years old. He died because his house was flooding. He had his parents, his other family members in the house. He had to punch out the windows because the house filled with water so quickly. He punched out the windows, got them out of the house, but he severed an artery. His arm basically almost came off from all the glass. And he did pass away in front of his family because he bled out. Yeah. And the last words were, I love you. It's awful. Just told them to be safe. I mean, story after story like this, Ranj, it's really you can't wrap your brain around the tragedy and devastation.
105 people right now, they know confirmed dead in Texas. They're still looking for 23 people. So we will keep you updated when we find out anything. And we will again talk to Gail Blomenkamp, Assistant Fire Chief of the Boone County Fire Protection. A unit from Missouri is going down to Texas to assist, and we will talk to Gail about that. It's Chris and Amy on 104.1 FM KMOX.
It's time
now. Did you see this with Chris and Amy?
Ranj, I have a huge official announcement. The TSA will no longer require you to take off your shoes when you go through airport security, and they are rolling back that stupid and very gross rule today.
Oh, it's the worst.
You know,
I hate that rule.
It was the one guy
Richard,
has a shoe bomb, and then suddenly we all have to take our shoes off.
Richard Reed was his name.
Was it?
And if I'm not mistaken, Richard Reed, as he was trying to light his shoe on fire and blow up the plane, one of the guys who subdued him was an Evansville basketball player.
Really?
Yeah. Evansville from the Missouri Valley Conference?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's I remember that. And I want to say the dude's name was Kwame, but I have to go back and look it up.
We should see And how many unusual ways can Ron work the Missouri Valley Conference into every conversation?
I'm very proud of the Missouri Valley Conference.
Congratulations.
By the way, screw Missouri State for leaving the conference.
If you are a child or over 75, you really didn't have to do that anyway. And then TSA PreCheck, which is the main reason I got TSA PreCheck, because it's so gross. Oh, to walk in your socks or to walk barefoot. You see people walking barefoot through the airport.
It's disgusting.
Oh, my gosh.
So I was at the wedding on Saturday. And, you know, inevitably, there's the part of the night where women take their shoes off and they're walking around barefoot.
It bothers you so much,
yeah. Oh, it bothers me the most.
It only bothers you because you've never spent 8 hours in heels.
No, I fully understand why. I get why you're doing it. But a wedding floor, dance floor, disgusting. Just walking around with your shoes off.
I think it's like, imagine I took a sledgehammer to the bottom of your feet over and over and over again. Eventually, the pain from the sledgehammer will override the grossness of the floor.
Well, not for me.
Spikes and sledgehammers.
You're grossing me out, so keep your shoes on. So this is more of a late to the party, Amy, but did you see this story from, it actually happened back in November, and there is a scientist from the University of Oxford, his name is Tim Colson, and he has said, based on his analysis, that if humankind ever goes extinct, there's some event, we all die out, that there is one animal on Earth that he believes could take over.
Roaches.
Eventually.
Roaches.
Octopus.
Well, I feel like they're limited.
We are likely to be overrun. Earth is likely to be overrun by animals like birds, insects, whichever. While intelligent beings lack the fine motor skills needed to construct a civilization. Octopuses. I thought they were octopi.
I think it's octopi.
It says octopuses, on the other hand, are potentially better candidate for filling an ecological niche in a post-human world. Wait. Their ability to solve complex problems, communicate with one another in flashes of color, manipulate objects, and even camouflage themselves with stunning precision suggests that, given the right environmental conditions, they could evolve into a civilization-building species.
This guy needs to just, like, get some friends and go out. First of all, what catastrophic event would happen that we're overrun by animals and insects? Because I thought the problem is
there'd just be too many of them.
We're killing, but that's not going to happen. Our problem is we're killing them off.
No, he's saying that if we're all dead,
that's
what would be left.
So he's saying
there would be birds and insects. A lot of them would flourish.
Yeah.
But if there was going to be an intelligent life form that would end up taking over and building a civilization, it could be the octopuses.
I feel like they're going to be stuck with the water. You know what I mean?
Well, you know, I still can't think of
some way where all the humans would die, but insects and animals would live, because it would be some type of catastrophic, toxic, climatic, whatever it is, tragedy. That would end all humans, but keep bugs and animals fine. And the water?
They would evolve their way out of the oceans.
This guy needs to make some friends.
I think he's probably onto something. An octopus?
I think he's
could drive
on
a car.
Something.
Yes. On the right side of history.
The octopuses with all their arms.
Are you sure it's octopuses? They could drive two cars at once. Stocks have dropped after the announcement of tariffs on countries like Japan and South Korea. So what does that mean for you?